do 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 do. Hello, everyone. This is Super Steve. Dial in from the bunker.
I don't think you're fooling anybody with your Super Steve, but we'll trick him onto the show somehow.
When I would go vacationing in the Adirondacks, I would commonly read Captain Canuck. No, Canuck. Is that how he says? Huh.
This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Happy 2021, everyone. Indie Comic Book Noise is back for a brand new year. Hopefully to spread some comic book cheer in the new year. Today we're running with almost a full house. That includes myself, Andrew the LA Rabbit, up in the icebox, Kevin. Say hi, Kevin.
Back for a new decade?
Dialing in from the historic Rideau section of the nation's capital. It's the Ottawa Otter, Phil.
Hello.
Super Steve sadly could not attend. He said he had some very important business down in the comic book bunker.
AKA better things to do.
He has friends and families and loved ones, which always get in the way of podcasting.
We'll get one of those one day.
Yes.
See, I don't never know if I should be worried that he's spending so much time in the bunker or not. I mean, it is a great bunker.
It is. I've been there. I totally recommend it, but I would like him to be transmitting from the bunker.
If you live in the States right now, I figure a bunker is a good place to be.
You ain't lying. Indie Comic Book Noise. Well,
those doomsday preppers, they if they didn't have it set up, they probably had everything set up for the millennium thing, and now they can just keep on repurposing it.
Well, I hope they swapped out their food stores. Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. The Deliberate Noise Network is an awesome collection of only the best podcasts and lifestyle brands.
Whoa.
We're part of the independent comic book noise coverage, but you can find other comic book related podcasts related to other things. If you enjoy Marvel and Disney based comics, you can listen to Marvel Noise, which sometimes features some of us moonlighting secretly behind the door, taking our big corporate paychecks. But thanks to Derek, as always, he's the one that kind of put this whole thing together, and without him, we wouldn't be here. So shout out to him. You can listen to his own individual podcasts as well. So much great stuff out there. We have a Twitter account, Indie Comic Book N, where you can interact with the podcast. You can also go to the Facebook fan page. Does anyone post to that thing, Kevin?
Purportedly.
Okay. Well, I'll take that as a, hey, why not try it? You never know. You can find old episodes of the podcast on our website at indiecomicbooknoise.com. And that goes all the way back to even before any of us were hosts of the show. We've only been hosting this show for scant few years. Although, actually, I think we're closing in on quite a few years. Yeah. But I like to pretend that we just took over the place. We just busted in.
Yeah, is there going to be, like, more of us than them eventually?
We may have already crossed that point.
Yeah. Okay.
We have done coverage of the history of Indie Comic Book Noise and our history in some of our anniversary episodes.
Yep.
Those are always good fun for the...
Which was from last year, I believe.
To get the family around. But right now, we're looking forward. It's 2021. The remit of the show is generally to discuss what we feel represents the best and the brightest, or at least what's come across our desk in the independent comic book world. That can include anything from some of the largest publishers in the world, you know, from all across the galaxy. If someone wants to send us a comic book from Mars or something, or maybe they made one on the space station, I don't know. I'll certainly give it a gander. but it can include quite small, you know, handcrafted, locally sourced, small batch comics as well. We also frequently get sidetracked on issues related to the industry in general, whether that be licensing opportunities in TV, film, other related merchandise. That can be toys, video games, bed sheets, pajamas, toothpaste, novelty soaps, and other HMBA items. You know, we just do what we like. We generally, one person will suggest something, talk about it, the other people will chime in, and then we move along. As you heard from the beginning of the show, we do have our warning, but as I always say, that really is just about the fact that we sometimes use colorful language and can have adult concepts discussed in these things. Comic books cover the realm from the mundane to the very serious, and those can include issues of a more mature nature. So we want to put you on notice about that, but really, it's like we're some of the most harmless people you're going to run across, with nothing but very bland milquetoast takes on everything. So we invite you to tune up your iPod or MP3 listening device and sit by the fire. You can curl up in the chair. Oh, wait, no, that's only when Kevin and I are doing our friendly giant riff.
Oh, yeah. I hope we get back to the friendly giant riff this year at some point.
I think that's
that was like Con Man. It was usually the friendly giant.
I think that's a reference that only you and I get. I don't even think Phil is deigns to recognize Canadian television's greatest contribution. Phil, did you ever watch
television shows?
Did you ever watch The Friendliest Giant, Phil?
I've seen him in person.
No shit. I got to hear this story.
Yeah. Well, I was very young, so I don't really have much of a story. But yeah, I used to love The Friendly Giant. God, that was like my favorite.
Yeah, that guy's a fucking genius.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Phil, that was on the song at the beginning. Like, I used to love all those kid shows at the time. And I used to see a lot of them sometimes live or whatever, if they would tour and stuff.
Wow, Phil, you're a badass. Did you get to meet Rusty and the whole gang?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
I've even seen, I tried out, remember that show... I can't believe you did it on television or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, you can't do that on television.
That Canadian one, I tried out for that one. Yeah.
Whoa, how about that, Phil? Yeah. Did you also watch Mr. Dress Up? I always liked that one.
Yeah, I was a huge on that for sure. That was probably one of my favorites at the time.
How about that? I don't think they make Mr. Dress Up anymore, Phil.
No,
that guy's got to be like 900 years old. Yeah. Be pretty funny, though. But hopefully Casey and Finnegan are still out there making mischief. And I definitely think the Friendliest Giant guy, that guy can't be alive, right?
No. Like,
he'd be
no.
pretty
he's
old.
Gone. Yeah.
I mean, he's a giant, so.
All right.
Oh, I mean, no. Alligator Al.
I kind of want to see an what episode him? Now.
Is he still hanging out in the garage or something?
Well, Kevin and I, when we did two-man shows, sometimes I would steal the theme music from The Friendliest Giant and use that for episode intro or outro, because I always loved his little recorder playing and getting Rusty and everybody together and hearing the adventures of the day. But anyways, that was a ridiculous digression.
Yeah. We had way better kid programming than the crap they have these days.
Yeah, nostalgia, you can't beat it. It was always better in the old days.
Well, right. Why are we here then? We're done.
Are you kidding?
So long, everybody.
One of my comics is a really old comic.
So. Oh, no.
All right, who wants to start? Who wants to kick off 2021?
You guys canceled my main piece because I thought we were going to do a Deathmate special.
Whoa. You see, that's why you mentioned that in the email.
Yes, well, we don't tease the listener, Phil. We might return. Kevin's legendary Deathmate series may conclude with all of us contributing. But who wants to go? Who's got something? I can go, but I don't want to hog the mic, so to speak.
I did pick up something cool. I'm pretty sure this is the first appearance of Jason from Friday the 13th in comic books.
Whoa.
But from 1993, I think it is. But it's Topps Comics Satan 6, number 404. I don't have the rest. This is, I guess, a Jack Kirby property, Satan 6. Do you guys know that one?
Yes. Steve covered some of those Topps Kirby, and I went... jumped on eBay a few years ago and bought a whole bunch of them because they have like cards stuffed in them and everything. They're great.
Yeah. Mine doesn't have a card and it wasn't bagged. I just have like an empty copy. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to get to some of them are sealed, but yeah, I need to do a big dive into those. But what did you think of?
Well, this one, I wasn't too interested in the story. It's like, I didn't even read the whole issue. The Satan Six, they don't seem to really appeal to me. But I just picked it up because it was Jason's first appearance. And this is when Topps took him on, got his license, because after this they did a Jason Goes to Hell adaptation. And then they did the Jason versus Leatherface miniseries. But this one, yeah, just in the beginning of it, I don't know anything about these characters or what they're about, but they want like someone to fight or something like that. So they call in Jason Voorhees. And basically, he kicks their ass for about two pages, and then they zap him away. But the last thing one of the characters says is, on this day, the Friday the 13th, Jason goes to ... which is to hell, because that's when the movie was coming out. And then the comic series, too. So it was just to pretty much promote that.
What if that's how the movie began? That would have been weird.
Yeah.
I can't believe, Phil, you're wearing Kevin's hat. Normally, he's the... cold-hearted speculator looking to flip valuable first appearances. Yeah. Are we all switching now?
But overall, like, I only paid a couple bucks for this, so it wasn't like I broke the bank or anything, but I just wanted it for Jason's first appearance. But yeah, I couldn't get into the story overall, like the concept of Satan 6. But I got issue 404, so it's a bad place to start. I'm guessing.
Memory serves, that whole thing didn't last very, like, there were a bunch of titles. I really should pull those and look at them, because I know that that little experiment of theirs didn't go, because they also, I think Ditko might have worked on one and stuff. They had a nice little stable.
Yeah.
But, like I said, I bought them, and maybe I'll bust those out. Maybe I'll see if I got number four. Although... you always feel that pang when you rip open the bag and the card
falls
out.
I do it though, because I'm like, what are you going to do? You know, like, are you going to really sell these bagged comics eventually? Like, no one's going to want some of these. Although you're Jason,
how dare you, Phil? I was planning on never working again.
Well, it's like these Image comics, you know, like I'm reading again, like I'm loving it, but nobody wants them. You know, most of them.
Wow. Like,
and even if they are the investment, Kevin, you have a structure for unloading comic books, but Phil and I don't. Like, you have outlets and you table it. Like, for us to do that is an additional, like, you've kind of factored that expense in for time and money and energy.
Yeah.
Like, I found that when I did my big shrink down a couple years back. Like, even some of these duns that are worth, like, maybe if it's worth... had to be worth more than $20 an issue to even try and wrestle with it. Cause even if it was like ooh, that one's worth $6. Like, you couldn't immediately turn that over in any kind of quick amount of time.
Yeah.
I sold a few things on eBay, but like I said, I kept it to, I think my minimum was 10 or 15 or whatever before I would consider it. Cause it just wasn't worth all the hassle and effort.
If you have Jason or Freddy comics, you can make a lot. Cause usually they're low print runs, and horror fans will always pay a lot, and a lot of them are after stuff like that. So if you do have issue four of this, you should hold on to it.
It's been so long since I've tabled.
Well, you know, that's from a different reason.
I mean, it's just crazy, like... people are like going to have stuff, and it's going to be like, yeah, this stock is from like 2 years ago, but it's all new. So I'm just at this point, I don't want any cons to be like, apply to be at our con. I'm like, I'm happy when that email doesn't come in every day.
Yeah, I'm unsure. I'm hoping tentatively that by fall, things will start to
get back. You're going to be the last one out of a lockdown.
That's for sure. On the priority list, I'm about as low as you can get, but I'm hoping. I mean, I don't really, that's me completely spitballing and not having any clue and just hopes upon hope, but I think it's somewhat realistic to think that that could be. But also remember, I wouldn't go to like San Diego right away, but I might go to one of them little dirt shows that I like if, you know, everyone's gotten vaccinated and things like that. But nothing big.
I'm not familiar with that one. Everyone's gotten vaccinated.
Yeah. Well, that's
vaccination con.
Yeah. Up here, there or down here, I guess for you guys, they're distributing vaccines, but it's pretty, you have to be in health. Like I know people that got it, but they all are like healthcare workers or have some in.
Does one of them yell, Mega City 2 really needs the vaccine?
We do. Mega City 2 is mega no fun.
Is that Judge Dredd?
Yeah.
It's totally Dredd.
We did a big Cursed Earth retrospective a few years back.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right, but
that reminds me of, like, that comic, and then I'm like, oh, I'll just start watching a lot of Star Trek instead of the news and stuff. And then I'm always surprised at the amount of episodes where there is a virus or a plague or something similar to that stuff, and I'm like, oh, not again. Please, no.
Yeah, I'm in the same. I watch a fair amount of goofy, also sort of weird post-apocalyptic low-budget movies and stuff, and you're right.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are like, oh, the mutants, the virus is loose, and the mutant, and you're like, oh, no. I don't want those ones.
And then she's saying stuff on the Enterprise like, oh, this virus is mutating every 20 minutes, and I'm like, no, please, no. This doesn't sound good. Why isn't everyone dead by now? And they have, like, no containment at all. She's just walking all around, and I'm just like, it's like seeing Bruce Wayne all sick on Batman, and then he coughs and puts his hand on the doorknob as he leaves this one office, and I'm like, maybe he did that on purpose because he didn't like the guy he was visiting. It's so weird. Stuff you wouldn't have really thought about before.
Before the world was ending. Yes, it's change our own. But last year wasn't completely without merit. I ended up watching a bunch of online Comic-Cons, and one of them caused me to request a book that I got for Christmas, which I thought I'd talk about, which I kind of enjoyed. And it's Jean Luen Yang and Tien Pham. They did a book called Level Up.
Mm.
And Jean most recently did the Superman radio adaptation for the Distinguished Competition.
Didn't he do some kind of basketball?
Well, he did. His big breakout book was American Born Chinese.
Yeah, yeah.
I read The Shadow Hero, which was a reboot of a Golden Age comic he did.
And then there was Boxers and Saints, wasn't there?
Yes, I didn't read those, but I did read The Shadow Hero. I also didn't read The Superman Smashes the Clan. I listened to the radio programs. The original ones are on the good old internet, so I did listen to some of those. Superman had a few where he fought the Clan of the Fiery Cross and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Always good stuff. But anyways, this was fun. The two of them were on a panel together. It's called Level Up, so it involves video games, Kevin.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
I like video games, too.
Do you really, though?
Are you kidding me? I have every system right now in front of me. I have probably, like, just on the PlayStation 4 alone, I probably have 1,000 games. Well, yeah.
This one features a lot of Nintendo, and I always think
I got
all the Nintendos. That's why he's talking about me.
I got all the Nintendos.
But it's a real fun. So it's a story about a young man whose dad really wants him not just to go to medical school, but to very particularly study a GI specialist. You know, gastrointestinal, colonoscopies, all that sort of stuff.
this isn't the story about Jim Lee, right? They're like, you're going to become a doctor. And then he's like, yeah, I'd rather become an artist. And they must have been like, oh, no.
This is, it's very similar. Like, parents, like, the dad and mom are always pushing him. But he discovers video games as a young man.
Yeah.
And they're, like, so addictive to him. But his parents are not thrilled with it. But first, it's he wants to play in the arcade. That's where he first sees him. But then the Nintendo, the NES, comes out. And he's just obsessed with the NES. So it's kind of interesting because it's a little bit after my time. Like, his age would have been... well, he doesn't get too much... Well, the first game he sees is an old Pac-Man coin-op in a restaurant they go to. But for him, he hears about the NES in the playground, and he's dreaming of it and dreaming of it, and puts clues all over the house, kind of like the Christmas story. And for Christmas, he gets a chemistry set. Because, you know, his parents really want him to, go be a doctor. But his dad ends up dying of liver cancer right before he graduates high school. And this kind of throws him off a little bit. But right after the funeral, he goes and buys a Nintendo system. And he plays and plays and plays and becomes like an expert at video games. Like a and he finds a buddy that's good, and they play games all the time. But he's kind of haunted by the guilt for his mother and also his dead dad about, you know, supposed to go to medical school. You're supposed to go to medical school. And weird things are happening. These feathers start showing up, like falling from the sky. Like, there's a bit of magical realism I like. And then suddenly, these four little angels show up, and they say there is destiny. And they look like they have little halos, and they, like, are like, you have to study now. And they, like, force him to study and work. And it's just interesting that they're real, kind of. I mean, no one else sees them. But that's what I like about comics. You can have this thing in it. And it doesn't feel forced, or you know what I mean? Like, you can have these kind of weird elements and not think about how would you portray it. So the angels, he's in trouble at school. So the angels go and they beat up, they threaten the dean to let him back into college.
Yeah.
And they do. And then they help him. So while they make him study and everything, they also help him, you know, around the house and clean up, and they lean on him, and he shows up to his buddy's house, and he gives them all his games and gaming systems because he's got to study and he has to get in, and he wants to go to medical school like he promised his dad. And his buddy's like, you can't do this, you know, we played thousands of games, you're really good at this. And he's like, well, I guess, but I got my destiny. So the angels bother him, and he gets into medical school, which is really cool, and finds a little crew in medical school. But he is not really into it, especially the gastrointestinal. That's like you have to deal with, you know, poop and large intestine. You know what I mean? Like, not to be gross or anything, but you need to have a stomach for that kind of work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, most of it's colonoscopies and all that, and I've had those. It can't be fun, basically.
No.
But he has his little crew that he hangs out with, other than the little angels. But he starts getting more into the crew than the angels. And the angels are kind of bummed about that. But eventually, things kind of fall apart with his crew, and he ends up running into his old buddy, who played video games, who is now playing video games for money. There was that little window of time when, you know, they had, like, contests. I don't know if they still do. Kevin, do you know? Do they still have, like...
They have leagues.
Little not, like, for the League of Champions and stuff where you're a full-time gamer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, those weird one-off games.
For sure they have contests. Yeah.
Yeah. You mean, like Super Smash Brothers?
Yeah. Like, you'd go and be, like, the best Nintendo player in the state or whatever. But he runs into his friend who is doing that. And so he decides to quit school and become... the epiphany comes when he's running from the four angels and he realizes they're actually ghosts. and they're ghosts of his father and himself, and they have these memories. And so he eats the ghosts like Pac-Man and sees the memories where his father also promised to become a doctor, but ended up becoming an engineer, and all sort of the problems about how you can become a better, happier person. And so he ends up meeting up with his buddy and becoming a part-time gig as a game tester and competing in tournaments. And he wins a jacket and a trophy and all this stuff.
Wow.
And then when he's at the store...
Yeah. Do not give your kids this book.
Oh, it's not over yet. But when he's at the store, he meets one of the guys he treated in a clinic in medical school who's like, oh man, you saved my life, that test.
They realized it was a problem. Me. Thank you.
Yeah, and it helped. Yeah. And so he quits that and goes back to medical school.
What?
And hand me the poop tubes. I'm back in.
And well, it turns out his dexterity is good for work. You know how nowadays a lot of medicine, it's robots and all that. And he's got that fine motor skills to do all that stuff. So it's really this interesting journey. And so it's pretty, like it's the smaller, that sort of 3/4 digest size.
Yep.
And it's color, but it's that watercolor where it doesn't completely fill in the lines, you know what I mean? That where it's, there might be little gaps in between the line work and the coloring. And it's mostly, you know, like 6-panel grids, a couple of splashes and things like that. But it's, I think pitched, like it won a bunch of young adult things, but I think if you're an older person, it has value from thinking about decisions you make and family guilt and all that stuff. So I like, and the other thing I like about good comics this way is they really flow. Like it, you really, Kevin may not like this, but I really turn the pages. I read this thing in like 2 sittings, and there's something about, it kind of reminds me of Bone in that way of like, just not that the drawings aren't detailed or anything, but it just flows like, there usually isn't a lot of complicated panel layouts or exchanges or anything. And you just go from like page to page to page. I mean, I did flip back a little bit with some of the Angels thing, trying to figure out if that was real or in his head or whatever. But the book stayed with me, and I just love that addicting kind of like, you just got to go. You can't put it down, and it just flows so smooth. Not that I don't appreciate some of the other stuff, and the next one I'm going to talk about didn't have that flow, but it had a lot of detailed artwork. So those are the ones where you kind of get lost, sort of noodling around in your head, looking at all the different angles and stuff. But this is one where I just sped right through it and really liked it. And like I said, it was the weird. I like how he's going to play video games in medical school, then video games, then and it's just kind of neat how he realized there was more to it. He had to find his own path. And I don't know, I was very impressed overall. Liked it. Liked it more than I thought I would. And I really, it also was time when I just needed a book like that that was not going to, it talks about a lot, but it's not overly baroque or complicated or something with alternate timelines and weird flashbacks and this to that to the next thing. And you're like, wait, what's that character? Oh my God, he was dead the whole time or what? You know, that kind of mystery about it. Man, I talked a lot about that book, didn't I?
And I like digest size. I like that.
Yeah, it was just a fun level up. I heard the two guys on a panel, and I was really surprised. And like I said, the magical realism of the ghosts, because he learns things from their memories that he would have no way of knowing, memories that his father had type of thing, and about the family. I'm finding your place. I don't know. It was just good. Maybe it hit me at the right moment or whatever too. Sometimes you read these books about life choices and what are you doing and everything, and it just makes you think and like, oh, kind of a neat way to look at things. I never had parents that like leaned on me to be a doctor or anything, so that part I don't really relate to in the same way.
Yeah, there's always something, like if not, like, what do you call that? Just the, don't become an artist. Don't get a job that where you make zero money.
Yeah. But just kind of the unrelenting pressure and how it really cracked the guy. But like I said, even if that's not your, it wasn't my situation, I could still enjoy the story, still made me think, still followed along. Like, I feel like people nowadays, there's value sometimes in reading stories that don't mimic your own all the time. And so it's good to kind of see these other things, because you will analogize, like, you know, hey, I was from a farmland, but I wasn't born on the planet Tatooine, but I could still kind of relate to that famous character. I'm talking about Luke Skywalker. That was for Kevin. He doesn't really follow Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought when you said there was, like, things showing up, I was starting to think of, you know, when Scott Pilgrim started having the twists that there is other stuff intersecting with his real-world stuff.
Yes, that kind of, well, the ghost, the angels thing, like I said, for a long time, I thought it was just in his head. But the way they impacted his life, like, then I was like, oh, I guess they're really real. So that was the part. And I did think it was funny that he has a realization when he thinks of it like a video game. A little yellow man running through a maze being chased. And he eats them to get their memories. Yeah, it was just clever. I really liked that watercolory look. The line work is very gestural, kind of like little, not super accurate anatomy type of thing. I don't know, it just came together. I think some people might refer to this artwork as simple, but I don't feel that way. And I also feel like the watercolor backgrounds add a lot of depth and everything, because you don't have the sort of modern superhero comic shading that color gives. It's just sort of that watercolor look. I'd be curious. Maybe if I can find a link to something, I'll put it in the show notes so people can get a taste of it. I don't know what's out there. Sometimes I can jam stuff and leave it in the show notes.
I guess you have to order it online, this one?
I assume it's in comic stores and stuff, but I haven't been in a comic store in forever. The publisher is Squarefish. I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, it doesn't seem familiar. I always find it weird sometimes when artists are like, I drew 1,000 lines, and that creator only drew 5.
Yeah.
Like, it's always a weird argument to make.
Yes. But I just want to warn, like, if some people are like, I could see people arguing, like, well, I could draw this type of thing, even though, unless you're an artist, you can't. But it always looks more that kind of style where you're like, oh, I think I could do this, but it's harder than you think. With so few lines, we always know which character is which. And that's not easy to do with only a handful of lines on the page, you know what I mean? Especially without, like I said, the kind of complicated coloring. The watercolors add a different look. But I think a lot of these books for teens and stuff do go through different publishers, though, you know what I mean? I mean, we're obviously familiar with Scholastic and First Second, but I bet you there's tons of these companies that just do, that don't even, like, this might not be in that many comic book stores. I don't know, maybe it's more of a bookstore thing.
Mm-hmm. It should be in better comic book stores.
I would think so. Like I said, it's perfect for, I didn't feel it talked down to me. In fact, I was like, I think it'd be kind of weird if I was 12 reading about deciding to go to law school or medical school or what. It like seems like a lot of pressure. But again, that wasn't the elements I hit upon. But yeah, I heard the two guys, and I had read, like I said, the Shadow Hero and some of that stuff. So I was like, well, the two of them seem like fun guys. Let's, you know, check out their comic. So normally you'd go down to the floor and buy it off of them. But in this case, I waited for Christmas.
Yeah, my thing is one of those should have... could have bought it off the floor, maybe, of Decaf in some fantasy realm where you can actually meet people and go to conventions.
Well, I mean, that wasn't that long. Like, yeah, 2019, we went to shows.
I mean, even if this fall, it's like some cons like need the full year to rustle up like their massive show. So I kind of just feel like, well, that's 2 years gone, because if if depending upon where you were in the calendar, right? Like, you're getting hit twice, in, like, 2 years in a row within the span of 1 year.
Yes.
So I'm just like, well, something like, even though TCAF was a little bit out, like, I don't really expect them to do, like, a show for this year either. And then I'm like, what are they going to do it in the fall? Like, they're going to pull it together in a few months? It's like, you might as well just wait till, I don't know. I don't know what you do. It's like, it's tough.
Well, I feel like if they're in their mindset, if they don't do a show or have that hope, then they're done, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know how some of those, I mean, I think if they had bad deals and they might not have gotten their deposits back from convention center, like, you don't know what they, if they end up getting screwed by various vendors and money commitments that they outlaid, I'm sure it's the end of, I mean, look, shows go away, come and go all the time, but this could really sink.
Yeah. Or the people running them could be losing money right now and not be able to run them this next time, you know?
I don't know. Kind of a weird situation. But anyhow, this is from, I guess it's a TCAF favorite or indie favorite or ordering from the previews. Now, if you can make it into the previews favorite for, you know, we cover indie stuff. And then I think, I'm like, I don't know, is that really super, super indie? Like, you know, it branches off, you know, you have your Drawn and Quarterlies, your Fantas, your like really indie stuff. And then I think this is as a purely indie type of thing, for Floating World Comics.
Yeah. That name is ringing a bell.
So this is, Night Hunters, which has one of these, you know, like the old computer terminals, from like maybe 80s going into the 90s, where it was like a black screen and it would have like green text or something.
Yeah, like the Alien movies.
Oh, I sadly remember when those were what I used. We used to call it the green screen copper tone tan, was the sickly color you would get if you spent hours and hours sitting at those empty dummy boxes. Because usually they were just dead terminals hooked to a machine. You didn't know where the machine was.
So this is just like a diagram on like one of those screens of like the human body. Mm-hmm. But it also, like, half of it is like robotic. And then the back cover kind of has like the cool human skull being cracked open, and then there's like a lightning bolt
or
a lightning.
So you saw this in previews and then ordered it especially?
Yeah. Because I wasn't going to be, I mean, who knows how many of these things eventually make their way to where, right? But I'm like, I'm not going to any cons anytime soon. And this is exactly, maybe people find it easier sometimes to find indie books, but usually I'm not like looking for the like $50 trade paperback or the usual Fantagraphics stuff. So sometimes, see, this is the trouble I guess I had with like some of the AWA or Aftershock or whatever. I'm not necessarily looking for the, like, it looks like it's all professional. I'm looking for something in between, like, the arts comic scene and the real glossy, you know, slick professional indie comic. I want something sort of in between those things with maybe some cool ideas. So sometimes that's a little hard to come by, which is why when you go to a show, I find it's easier to find those types of things.
Mm-hmm. Not just fine, but you can kind of look at it and see better than some description or whatever. That's the nice thing about those shows that are on people's tables and stuff, and you get a pretty quick view if it's something you think you like.
This is true. And it also has... I think someone we're familiar with, or at least Andrew, you're familiar with. And then Phil will pipe up and say, I know who Alex Exert is.
Who?
He did some stuff for Black Mask. That was it. Is it Space Riders?
I haven't read any Black Mask. I don't think.
There's some other stuff too, like Tarantula. And
I saw something in previews, the newest previews, I think, though, from Black Mask I was interested in.
Like, I don't have a lot of Black Mask stuff, but anyhow. And then this is also written by Dave Baker. And even though, like, that's broken down, like, art writer type of thing, they make it pretty clear that it's, like, both of them, like, bringing something there. Like, it says created by, and it has both of their names. So mm-hmm. I don't think it's, like, a strict... That's the other thing with some of these things, right? It's the writer's idea, and then he's just paying an artist, and it seems like more of a job. And it kind of goes into what, like, in the letters page, too, where they go into the inspiration for this comic, and they go in... It's funny, they go into some of the stuff. Oh, it's funny that he also mentioned, because this plays into the story a little bit of, I guess they call this an essay at the back. I don't know if I would, I guess it's kind of essay-ish, but they said, I wrote this essay before the election, and our book will come out after the election. I don't know who wins, but this is the context for these ideas and what they're feeling and everything. So anyhow, we're going to the future of 2057, not 2079. Isn't that the popular thing to do right now, to go to 2079?
Is it? I don't know.
I'm trying to make video game references, Andrew.
Oh, is that what that cyber... I didn't get that game.
Yeah, Cyberpunk. No, me neither. You have to wait till you have one of the new systems, I think.
I'm slowly... I just got that Avengers game for Christmas that came out over the summer. Yeah? So I'm slowly...
I tried the beta when it was out.
Slowly working. Game. Yeah, it's okay. I wish they got comic book fans to make these games rather than video game people. But, you know, it's hard to find... Like, you want to make it a good game so you get video game people instead of comic book people. I get it, but I would just
prefer that. You played the Avengers one that was by Busick, though, right? The Avengers Lego one?
Yes. The Lego games are all fun. I mean, I've kind of burned at... The last one I got was The Incredibles, but I played, like, so many of the Batman and Justice League and Star Wars and all the... I really love them. I did get a little burnt, you know, after playing a bunch of them. Plus, they're really huge games. Like, you unlock all this stuff, and then you can keep playing. They're really good value. Like, if you're like, I want, you know, a game I'm going to blow a lot of hours into, get any of the Lego ones. You'll spend forever unlocking everything.
So there's many of these ad type of things in like, the background. Or, like, posters and stuff like that. So you have, like, the story of a family here where they're, like, in some kind of decrepit, like, alleyway of... and then there's, like, a poster above them. It's like, freedom awaits. Enlist now. And then the kid's just like, oh, I can't wait to become this super cop, the greatest police officer ever. I'm going to have money and food and sleep in a real bed. And they're like, you can dream to be anything you want. And then you realize, yeah, maybe that isn't the greatest thing. And then they have, like, the other signs, like, I guess it's kind of like Dread with the signs, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the future is supposed to be, you know, advert capitalism takes over and you get ads everywhere you turn around.
And it's like, I'm not sure if... Maybe some of these people have spray painted on or whatever, like, peace through superior obedience, and it's like someone with, like, handcuffs on. And it says, crime only pays if you are a cop. Be smart. Sign up now. Make money and hold up the status quo. So you probably know where this is headed. And then they have, like, this giant... It's not like a cutaway, but it's sort of like a map type of thing where there, it actually looks like it might be, I don't know, it looks like what you would get if you were to draw over sort of like a photo, but not like it's sort of, I don't know, like a rotoscope type of, it's like a weird type of, but this is like a futuristic city type of thing. But they have like the towers, and I'm like, oh, do the rich people live in the towers? But then like it designates them as prisons, and the amount of residents you can have in each one, and the waiting list. It also tells you their murders per hour. Like some of these places, it's like 62 murders per hour. And then later on, they make a reference to like, oh, yeah, we're keeping this place pretty safe. Like, safest place on Earth is Venezuela, by the way. So this family's trying to make it into another part of the city before the mandatory curfew kicks in. Because they've scavenged together some goods. And you know you run across your people trying to solicit you and everything in this environment while you're on your way.
Is this an all-ages book, Kevin? Or what kind of solicitations are you talking about?
Well, they're trying to get you to enlist.
Oh, that kind. Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't be out of place to see other kind of solicitations. Because the father does say, remember, let him do the talking. Don't look at some of these people. And let me hear it, boys. What's the rule? Never talk to the trade recruiters. Remember that, Andrew.
I don't talk to anybody.
I mean, that's for the best. Especially right now. So yeah, they do get across the border, and they do get where they're going, but they get a little tip when they sell off some of their scavenged goods here about some of the police are going to be out at night causing a little bit of a scene here to keep the peace. So they sort of get involved in one of these things, and one of them gets like buried in rubble. Luckily, their father saves them, and then they go back to the guy they sold the goods to, and then they're like, "Oh, you gotta really help me, man!" But he's like, "Well, your kid's in pretty bad shape, so wouldn't you know it?" He gets some cyborg parts. He gets it. It's funny because he makes a reference too. He's like, "Oh, the cops with the metal arms and everything," and he's. You can sort of get the thing about, of course, metal arms are cool, but also could do a lot of damage with some metal freakish arms. And you get that threatening impression from that type of stuff. I'm totally down with the metal arms are cool. Winter Soldier, Cable, that whole thing. Metal arms, especially in the early 90s.
Those guys only have one metal arm, though. Is it cool to have two metal arms, Kevin?
Wasn't there someone like on Cyberforce that had like three metal arms?
Dr. Octopus had four.
Yeah, but those were attached to his body. They weren't actually his like arms. I mean, technically, I guess you could argue that those were his arms.
Yeah, I mean, he controlled them just like you control your arms, Kevin.
But they were fused to his body.
Well, they had plenty of issues where they tied his arms up somewhere else and he mentally broadcast them to come free him.
Yeah. And then you're like, wait a second, didn't they know this before? Anyhow. So, yeah. This, it's weird because the next sequence, it's all in like purple and yellow. There's a lot of bright colors in here. Like, they get the pinks, the yellows, the greens. But anyhow, this other sequence, what's purple and yellow that we've covered here on Indie?
Jeez, purple and yellow.
Come on.
I mean, purple, I think the Incredible Hulk. But
oh jeez,
I think
it was a crossover between Marvel noise and indie comic book noise.
Spawn and DC?
Dreadstar!
Oh, Dreadstar's in it. Excellent.
So it's so funny that these pages are in that color, and when part of this kid's face is like redone, he has like a red eye, and like you don't really see like in the hood of what's happened to him, but you see like the teeth, and I'm thinking those colors. And then what was like the guy, Synergy or
Syzygy, I think.
Yeah. So you sort of like, it's like with those colors from Dread, and then those like from the other character, I'm just like, I can't unsee that. it's so weird. Like, I don't know if that's intentional or anything, but like that is hilarious how it works out to be. The only problem with these body parts is they say, oh, well, they're American. So there's like planned obsolescence. So you're going to have to keep on coming back to me and get these parts put in like every couple of years.
Software updates too, I bet.
Probably. Also, with the teeth in the face, he only does the two things now, click or click, click. One for yes, one for no. Now, that sounds really familiar. Very classic Star Trek episode, Captain Pike.
The glass menagerie, or no, that's not it. That's the Tennessee Williams play.
Wasn't it the menagerie?
Yeah, but the glass menagerie is the Tennessee Williams play that was way before Star Trek. Well, maybe not way before, but...
So then we leap ahead to 2078. Spoilers, Andrew, things haven't really gotten that much better.
Better than now or better than the time in the comic?
That's hard to say. I mean, things haven't gotten better in the comic, and there's certain things in here that have been evident or become more evident in our present society. So it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird at times. It's like you're doing your comedy or whatever, right? And then you're like, oh, this is pretty good. Or I even remember the one thing I said I created. Remember we covered that 24-hour comic I did. I'm like, this is absurd. And then later on I'm thinking, maybe this isn't as absurd, and it's kind of offensive to some people. Like, you're trying to keep ahead of some stuff, but who knows when some of this stuff like could be outdated in a few months. It's weird. So anyways, this kid that became the super cyborg guy is now a sniper in the future.
Does he have like a advanced code name, superhero type name?
I don't think so.
Like blood guns or something?
I mean, that like there's...
Trademark that, Andrew. Just in case.
I'm sure they were already in Wildcats or something.
I'm totally making that character.
I mean, it is futuristic, and like, I guess some of the sci-fi is sort of like over the top a little bit, but it's not too crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you see the guys with like the Geordi sort of visor or the DKR type of like mutant guy, like stuff like, but it's not like someone could have that stuff in the future.
Oh, for sure. They already got, you know, cyborg robot arms and stuff now. I mean, they don't shoot rockets or anything, but they got, you know, pretty good prosthetics, I'm sure. In another, you know, couple of decades, they'll be even more impressive.
I believe we're in the future, though.
Yeah, but that's what I meant, like a couple more decades.
We've slowly slipped into the future, right? So it's basically, like, after that point, it's, like, his adventures. And a lot of people get shot up. And then there's like this big, big crazy reveal, and I don't think it's really anything shocking. Like, he has a brother, so like there's like a opposing sides here, and of course one of the people he runs into is his brother.
And this is like issue one of a series or a complete story?
Yeah, I think it's 4 issues, I want to say. But it's not like a monthly. Like, I already pre-ordered number 2, but I think it was like every 2 or 3 months coming out, which would make pretty much sense. It's not a regular, just grind them out monthly schedule. It's funny, the sort of comments too in the essay. Like, he'll say, hey, this is what I'm feeling, this is what you can do, and then he'll back it up with a he'll just say, and that's the important part, right? Or I'll leave you up to decide that. Like, at one point he's in this essay is just like, artistic ambition and sincerity of intent is way better than that glib nostalgic play at a cynical attempt to sell our IP to Hollywood, right? But I'll let you judge, be the judge of that as well. It's like, and it's funny that they'll put something out there, and then I'll be like, but you can decide if we're successful or not. Like, it's sort of almost like those Casanova Mad Fair Action things where he's like, oh, I'm not going to totally write a summary for this issue. It's the last issue. I'm awesome. And then he's like, now I feel bad. No, I'll actually do that, guys. It's sort of like that, rather than just, thank you for buying the book. It's so hard to sell these indie comics. Yay, indie. You know, those type of, it feels like you're getting the hard sell after the end of the issue.
I always wonder, like, before Stan, was that really a thing? Like, the kind of, you know, making the personal appeal to the reader thing. I always associate him starting that trend, and it's gone on, but I was wondering, like, in the 60s before, or let's say late 50s, like, did you open it up, and was it like, dear reader, thank you for getting our book, or whatever.
I find it's more personable, too, if you lay something out there. Maybe someone enjoyed the comic, but they're like, I don't know how you couldn't say, hey, maybe there's a viewpoint represented in this comic, right? Like, maybe you're just totally just taking it at a base level and totally just absorbing it on one level, right? And then you get to this essay or whatever at the back of a comic, and you're like, whoa, 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 what? This is about something? But I think it's totally more personable to lay something out there and then say, and then for the writer to be like, but maybe I'm not right. Maybe you can decide if I'm totally crazy or not. I'm not saying this is the definitive answer. Like, I think that's better than the alternative.
Hey, it worked.
I mean, maybe you want to come off as that guy. I don't know.
I don't know. It's weird. A lot of times I don't always read kind of the front or back matter as much. So it's always good to know if it's something interesting. Because a lot of times I just want to get into the comic. Like, I didn't buy that thing to read a book.
This is true. But I knew on something like this, though, that I wanted to read the back. Because I knew there was going to be something in there.
Well, also, I'm cheating myself. I'm missing out on value built into the thing. But I want that comic, usually.
Nice thick board covers, too. So that's always nice. How much was this, anyways? Is that $3.99 or $4.99?
Only you can answer that question.
Well, it's just because of the small green type on a black background cover, not the easiest thing to read. The only part that's hard to read on the cover is the price.
Hey, they're not the dummies. I don't know how much this thing. Ooh, this thing's $12, the one I talked about, so.
I'm in for another issue, and I'm happy to be in for another issue.
So you,
I got a Baron Zemo from Zurt too. So, I mean, I was already in for his crazy, messy, confident artwork.
Well, doesn't it also, in some ways, having the not monthly schedule means you don't have to decide to pre-order? Yeah, like you pre-ordered two, but if it was monthly, you'd have to already have decided on 3 and 4 probably right from the get-go, practically.
This is true, and we were also talking a little bit about that, where about the first issue and then trade model, or the wait 2 months model. But where I don't think they're a bigger publisher, but I still feel like, even though they're Scout or Vault or whatever, like they're publishers, but I don't feel like there's still another level above, right? Like I feel like they're not like mid-level. Like, what do you call that?
I feel like
there's some kind of support system there from, they're not just guys like turning, like, I don't know what you call that.
I always think for me, it's that step above self-publishing, basically.
Yeah.
There's other people involved, and you've made that jump. But other than that, I'm kind of consider that informally the front of previews, but I would include, you know, First, Second, and the bigger companies is Oni front of preview. Like, kind of those big ones that every month something is coming out. That's sort of my definition of kind of the bigger side. And then after that, it's small publishers, which is just, like I said, you might have, maybe you go a month or two without something, but you mostly got stuff every month. And then after that, it's self-publish, where maybe it has a company name, but it's really like one or two people, and that's most of it. But that's just my unofficial looking at it.
Like, I kind of feel like even if they were, like, if you had a lot of stuff, and I've seen a lot of stuff from, like, the Floating World Comics, it still feels like they're under an umbrella. Like, it's self-published, but it doesn't feel like, there's not a line or an imprint, or it's just everyone publishing wild and crazy stuff under the same banner.
I think that's definitely smarter. Like, the more you can pool, because I'm sure what helps is having regular content. Like, if he does his book every 3 months, well, if they can find another guy to fill in the alt, like, it's better to have something, I'm sure, every month to help stay on people's radar and make whatever diamond minimum public, you know, all those kind of things. It must help to have something going regularly. Otherwise, people will be like, well, yeah, that thing, and then forget about it, you know?
I mean, I'm sure some comic shops treat them the same, but in my brain, like, these are all, like, segmented off into little suburbs.
Well, also, there's the one that dip a little bit into the art award-winning crowd. You know, the ones that have a few names that maybe have gallery shows or have won an award here or there and that type of thing, which get you a different crowd. You know, you might be able to stock those things in places that you don't just stock comics. Like I was talking about the one I've got, you know, which, because it's got the hook with the young adults, it's probably in other venues, not just comic shops or not just certain types of comic shops. And I think that's, again, if you expand that umbrella, well, you got this, like you say, your guy's done some work for different bigger companies as well. So that helps, rather than the guy who's just still scratching out his one-man show.
I think that went on long.
Yes.
I'm like you, Andrew.
Well, look, it's the new year, but we're still the old people. Is Phil still there?
I am. Sorry, I was just ordering comics on eBay.
I've done the... I just got a shipment of Marvel's What If that showed up the other day, so I
was trying to bid on a full collection of What, though, but I forgot to, like, add on my list, but I forgot to do it.
It's fun. For me, I think I've talked about this before. I like the lots because it helps the shipping if you're buying a bunch of books. Even if mm-hmm. I don't want all of them. Like, all I need to want is me most too. Of them. And then it's yeah. worth it rather than one.
Well, that's what I did for Image. I got, like, 6 different lots for $1 something of, like, 60 to 90 comics. And then shipping, I paid $30.
Yeah, this is how you end up with, like, a full run of Thunderstrike.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also risky. I've noticed that, too. Sometimes I think they just pad the shipping a bit. So I always try and so a few times I've gotten nervous because I've bid on stuff, and then I looked at the shipping and went, oh, that's what they're doing. And then I'm like, but luckily I get outbid usually because I'm just bidding in at the low level. But I'm like, oh, that's a clever trick. Just put your shipping up to be pretty high, and then at least you're not going to lose everything.
So, Andrew, you have something for us?
Yes. Well, I want to make sure Phil is good and aired out because I didn't want to step. I feel like we haven't been given Phil his due.
Oh, that's okay. The only other really thing I had, because I thought we were doing Deathmate tonight, is I've been reading Boris the Bear.
Oh, you talked about that one? I had at least one issue. He's got like a rocket launcher. Was that the first one?
He looks like a sword and a Uzi.
Is there one where he's got like a rocket launcher and like a Rambo headband? I think I had that one.
Oh yeah, he wears the Rambo headband a lot. And there's one where he has Kirby's pen, which looks like a rocket launcher.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of, because I remember
the rest
issue.
I don't have in front of me. No, that was one of the early issues, if it's that one. But he also, in some issues coming up, I know he goes against G.I. Joe, so that might be the one you're thinking of.
So when you say coming up, you mean these? They're not still made. These are books from the
80s,
right?
This is from 1985 from Dark Horse, and then it switches companies eventually. I got a full run, which is 34 issues, and then an issue one of another failed second series. But I haven't read enough really to talk about. But one of the things that was interesting is number 6 is the first published art in a comic of Rob Liefeld.
Oh,
where
nice.
He does a pinup. Yeah. I've been deep into Image, as you know, and I think I've read like every Rob Liefeld comic.
Wow.
So what's your favorite? Do you have a favorites off the top? Are you like a Bad Rock guy, or what's your...
Well, I've read every Youngblood, like even the stuff you've never even imagined existed. But my favorite for him was back in the day was always Supreme and Brigade. I like that stuff a lot.
Do they still hold up, or like
for me,
today?
Some of them do, some of them don't. Like it's kind of issue here and there. I still enjoy a lot. The Youngbloods, a lot of them I was reading for the first time. And I had fun. It's just, it's a mess. Like, for example, the second series goes 10 issues. Then he goes to Maximum Press. He starts that line. And it jumps to issue 14 for, like, no reason. So there's, like, a lot of messy points like that. Then he made Awesome Comics, which failed. And then he did one called Arcade Comics, which had, like, 3-4 issues. And then it failed. And then back to Image and has done a lot of things there again.
Yeah. So,
but it's, there's a lot more Youngbloods than I thought there'd be.
I feel like there's a good kernel of an idea there.
Mm-hmm. Well, but no, it's because all of his ideas are stealing from already created characters. Like Glory is Wonder Woman, you know, Supreme is Superman.
Yeah.
Shaft from Youngblood, that's, you know, either Green Arrow or Hawkeye, right? Like it's just every character.
Wolverine.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's Wolverines, yeah, in Bloodstrike. There's like every one of his ideas, but I don't know. I enjoy them for some reason. I was never a Rob Liefeld fan, but I'm starting to appreciate him a bit more nowadays. I like kind of some of his art during like the Youngblood type times. And a lot of those comics he doesn't even work on really. Like he just throws out some ideas and someone else does it.
Yeah, maybe comics. The studio or something.
Extreme was his. Yeah.
Well, as a guy who didn't read a lot of that Image, what would you suggest? Like, what's, like, the best Rob Liefeld Image stuff?
Oh, if you're talking Rob Liefeld, like that's definitely not my favorite image. But if we're going Rob Liefeld, God, that's a tough one. I don't know if I can recommend anything.
Phil, you've just been reading tons of it.
I know, but it's different for me, right? Because I've always been kind of into that. Like, I would, if I was recommending an image, old image like that, I would probably go with more Jim Lee's stuff. Like some of his like Wildstorm type stuff. But for, yeah, I don't know. I guess you'd have to go Youngblood with him. Because that's his main one that he's worked on a lot, you know?
Kevin, do you concur? Did you read that stuff?
I don't think I read any of that stuff.
Back in the day, my favorite was Supreme. I love Supreme, but...
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of in a different place, so...
What, you were still a Marvel guy at that time?
Yeah, and I wasn't someone that was going to follow them over or... It's hard for me to become like, oh, these guys are great, and now I'm like, I need to grow up out of these comics because I'm like so new to comics. It's like you're not. Yeah.
Well, for me, it's more just a fun new universe that I got to experience and see grow. You know, and there were so many crossovers, and like Savage Dragon was popping up everywhere, and. So for me, that's the fun I get from it.
I knew that like it was artists, and it's funny. Certain things I knew, but certain other things I didn't know. Like I knew like the quality from like a writing standpoint wasn't there.
Oh no, but some of them were. But yeah, a lot of them no.
But then it's like, but I didn't. So I guess I was just like, oh, if I'm going to read, like, I mean, obviously people are there for other reasons or a combination of reasons. You're not just checking out the writing and everything.
But like, I would rather
read like a bad Marvel story than a bad Image story, I guess.
Well, Phil, I must warn you. The phrase new universe to some of us older people means something a little different.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just never, I was getting out of comics.
Failed universe, yeah.
And the idea of jumping ship for some new thing was not appealing to me.
I didn't jump ship.
Still hanging on to Marvel.
I still read just as many DC, but for me, I don't know, I had a lot of fun with Image. I know it's not popular, but I've always loved those shiny covers. Like I'm special covers.
Yeah, they're eye catching. I mean, I just think it's been 30 years of it has worn people out. But like, you're not alone. I mean, they sold tons of them because of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's weird with Vertigo and Image. It's like I only came to those after they changed or did something different. Like that is, and then some people are like, oh, that's the bad stuff or whatever. Like Image, it's like, oh, powers and stuff. I'm like, then I was there. Or Vertigo, it's like, why the Last Man or something. It's not the stuff that the initial like rocket of madness is, like, I don't know, the booster or something.
I'm trying to remember when I got out of DC. It was definitely before Bane broke Batman's back.
Mm-hmm.
I think that right before then, and the Azrael and all that, that would not have worked for me anyways. But I think it was right about that time that I was like, you know what, I don't think I liked Batman as Batman, and having all that extra stuff was not something.
Yeah, no, that was a bad period where Marvel and DC were changing all their characters, like Daredevil, you know, and stuff like that.
I read all those stories in a collection going up to the baking Batman. A breaking of Batman's back. It was enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would now, but at the time, I had read a lot of Batman. Well, at the time, I didn't have the finances to continue supporting a very expensive comic habit. But I also think I just was not in a headspace for replacement Batman.
Plus, you're not after collecting that, one Batman comic, you need all of them.
Yeah, that's, story, I think, because before then, hadn't Superman done that with, like, the corner box had all the like, order that you'd read it in and all that stuff? Yeah. That was...
You needed the ball.
That was draining on...
Yeah.
Because Marvel had done similar tricks. Yeah, they were
But Superman wasn't so bad, though, because it was only a few books where Batman, you have Robin, and, you know, Catwoman, you have all this Azrael, like, everything, right?
They don't all cross over, though.
A lot of the time they do.
I mean, the extra titles, like, for the big crossovers, but I think only the Batman books are closer interlinked.
Yeah, that's my lasting memory as I was leaving comics was everything was interconnected in a way. Well, they did that with the Spider-Man and the Clone Wars. It was like 100 different books, it felt like, where you had to go from one to the one to the one. And it made it really hard if you were just trying to, like I said, especially with a limited budget. I wonder if going back in time now, knowing what I know that, like, hey, look, man, the market's going to collapse in a few years and things will shrink down. Well, if I could do it differently. But at the time, I had no, like, I was like, well, I can't afford it. And it looked like comics were just rocketing up forever, you know, like.
Yeah. But that's why, like, most of my Image collection came later from dollar boxes. So that's how I've been able to consume that world. Like, when I was buying them at the time, I only got, like, the first two issues, maybe, you know, for a lot of them.
It's so weird that they, like, yeah, they were in bins for years, but now that, like, a lot of time has passed, or a significant portion of time, it's, I mean, they're not making you tons of money, but people will still buy them for...
Well, I think you're looping around now. The people that bought those as kids are now solidly established in their profession and got money.
Yeah, like me. So I track things.
Yeah, they want to track things. They're not above, you know, they're not trying to haggle it down to a quarter. Like if they got to pay a couple bucks an issue or whatever.
Well, the other thing is if you grew up after that, it's like those are old comics to you. Like, yeah. You never grew up with them. They were never around, and they were from before you were born, possibly. So it's like, those are weird old comics to you.
Well, also, they're just not as, like, the Marvel and DC, that's all stuff reprinted endlessly. And you can get various trades or Marvel Unlimited or different ways. Some of that image, like some of the Image stuff is reprinted.
Oh, it's lost forever.
Some isn't. But like, you're just not going to find
most
it.
Most isn't. Yeah, most of that beginning stuff is lost to time.
And at least, like, the Christmas thing I couldn't find on comics. Like, I don't know if they're trying to market it that way, but that would be smart to be like, okay. Because that probably helps the back issue market, but it also is a limiting thing to me. Like, if there was some... the Image collection or some place to get all those and read them, I might be more tempted. But from what I've read, it just hasn't hooked me that much. So to try and track down all this stuff to read it once and that's it, because I don't think I'm going to go back to it. It's not as tempting.
I mean, you can find your Spawn, but big things like Wildcats isn't easy to come by. And then once you get to Image Central, like, good luck with a lot of those books.
Yeah, basically you can get Spawn and Savage Dragon. That's it for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe when you start getting into Witchblade and Darkness, you could probably find some of that.
Top Cow, I don't count.
What about the Pit? You don't have
except
all those?
No, Pit went to Full Bleed pretty quick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, there was some dispute.
I am tracking down it, though. That's funny you say that, because I have been trying to track them down.
I just thought that seemed like you're like that kind of type of 90s.
It's very hard to get, though, because it's so expensive and hard to get some of the issues when it goes to Full Bleed. But I've got about 7 or 8 Pit issues, and I need probably 10 plus another miniseries, I think. Or 12 issues in another miniseries. So, yeah, I still have a long way to go.
Sounds like you've hit the pits, Phil.
Yeah, that's the pitch. But yeah, that's what I'm trying to get. But otherwise, from Top Cow, like I count Cyber Force and I like Codename Strike Force. But otherwise, yeah, I'm not too big on Top Cow.
Really?
Like Witchblade and Darkness, I'm not. I've got the Onimuses. I've tried it, you know, but I can't get into it.
And then there's there are other similar-ish type of house style books too. What was it? There's like Ascension and some other weird stuff.
I liked Ascension, I think.
They're based out here a lot, but do you guys read any of the Aspen stuff? I used to see them at shows all the time.
I've dabbled here and there, I think.
I've picked up a few because they're out here, so they'll get a new series and I'll try it. But generally, it seems like, you know, they're kind of short-run series. They'll run a property for a while and then retire.
Like, I've never tried it. The Michael Turner stuff.
Yeah, neither. I haven't read the Fathom. I
feel like if you're going to jump in, you need kind of all of it. It seems like it's that type of thing, maybe.
I have the first issue, or at least I read the first issue of Fathom. But I think that was one of those weird things where it was like alternate interiors.
It just someone swimming the whole time or something like that?
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of swimming.
Yeah, like just mermaids talking to each other and stuff. And
I mean, it's sort of like...
You can reduce any comic to some silly premise, Phil. This is mermaids. I mean, I'm sure there's a log line for Youngblood that's not that flattering, so...
There's a lot of things not flattering about Youngblood, but I still enjoy it. It's my new guilty pleasure is Rob Liefeld stuff.
I mean, don't feel guilty.
Well, I don't think he's very much. I don't think he's very loved, is he?
His enthusiasm. I think people respond to his. Shows like he always had long lines for signatures and stuff.
Yeah. But he lost control.
After I saw the documentary with him in it, that's when I kind of started appreciating him. It was after I heard him talk a bunch.
Yeah, it's just every so often he'll blow up about something, and then you'd be like, oh boy, he's.
But like, I hate his DC work, but there's some of his Image work that I do like some of his drawings, but any of his DC stuff, I hate.
I only remember.
So I've always judged a lot
of that. The New 52 stuff. He had some books then.
Well, he did the miniseries of Hawk and Dove. That's kind of what I think.
That didn't do anything for me at all. But
like back in the day, but I enjoyed. I like Hawk and Dove.
Then. I'm a big Steve Ditko fan, so I like Hawk and Dove. I mean, for like the 3.5 issues he worked on it. But I think we've reached a good point, gentlemen. 2021 has started. What have you got, Kevin?
I have. Have we ever covered Ablaze on here? The comic company Ablaze?
Nope.
Maybe Super Steve.
Aren't they the good girl art one?
I don't think so. Aren't they're like it's hard to pin them down, but I'm assuming that some of the stuff they have is like the European stuff they bring over here.
Okay, I think
it has like the they have the Sumerian stuff and then the Vampire State Building.
I saw that one.
And then was it the Unsacred, which looks like a webcomic that they're publishing? Like it's hard to pin them down. It's a bunch of different stuff. But this is the Frost Giant's Daughter. They're publishing Conan comics. That doesn't strike you as strange?
No. That character should be... it's not in the public domain yet, like...
Well, I'm assuming that's how they're publishing this, right?
Yeah, it must be. So I'm like, I actually like when characters that have been around for a long time slip back in and they can have all those different versions of Wizard of Oz or things like that.
Because I remember that was the first thing that caught my attention from the company is when they said they were publishing Conan. And I was like, wait a second. And then it went on and on. Obviously, in the title, they don't have Conan. They can only have Conan in the comic. But they do mention that it's says Robert E. Howard's Savage Hero Uncensored, which is a weird promo. And I know they like to say, oh, it's uncensored, it's the real Conan, whatever. And then you look inside and I'm like, I don't like that actually turned me off a little bit. I was like, oh no, is this just gonna be like chopping heads off all the time? And then, you know what I mean? Like, is this gonna be very base?
Yeah, a lot of, like, topless women, I'm sure.
Yeah, like, there's going to be some fake maturity thing. So that actually didn't, probably why I didn't buy the first series anyways. And then it isn't. Like, it's just, it's pretty much like the Dark Horse stuff. So I don't know. I mean, they don't go over the top with the violence or anything. So I'm just like, I don't know, just weird marketing hype, right?
Yeah, who's the artist on it?
Robin Reach, maybe? R-E-C-H-T.
I would guess Reich, but I don't know.
Reich? I've seen Reich a different way.
Yeah, so have I.
I don't know. But they're the writer and the artist, and it says adapted from the work of Robert E. Howard, obviously.
Yeah, that's why I was more interested in the artist, to be honest with you. But it's a one-person outfit, so that makes it easy.
Yeah, so, and I have the Peach Momoko cover.
Yeah, of course. You do love that peach.
Sometimes. And that's probably the most revealing thing about the comic is the peach cover. You don't see anything, but it's the Frost Giant's daughter.
Yeah, if I remember, that's the story where it's the battle's over and he's dying and runs into the Frost Giants, and his never give up nature leads them to he no mortal ever makes it there, but he hangs on.
Pretty much. I mean, I've already read the Dark Horse version. I think that was probably the first Dark Horse story too.
How does it compare? Do you prefer this one or that one?
It's been a while since I've read the Dark Horse version. But I would say this doesn't get very far, but it seems similar. But this seems almost like Thor stuff. Like, I could, if this was young Thor, because there's a lot of Heimdalls and, like a lot of the things that Thor goes to with all the his Norse stuff.
Yeah, well, that's they were definitely leaning into that. Frost giants and all that.
Like, heavily leaning into that.
But I mean, the comic is leaning into the mythology, so.
But that's funny, because I'm just like, well, is one of these characters Conan? Conan doesn't even show up until, like, almost the last page. So that's probably why there's so much of the Thor speak going on here.
Oh, so this is going to be like a 4-issue limited series or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it definitely looks like it was, like, it has the not always, which is weird why it doesn't sync up. It's like someone wasn't, I don't know, maybe there's some reason for it that I can't figure out, right? But they have, like, the white stripe across the bottom of the page and the top of the page, like, it was, the book was in probably bigger dimensions than the comic. But it doesn't always follow the same on each page. I mean, maybe that's so they can put in their little footnote. Oh, maybe that's what it is? Because they're adding a little footnote to the thing, unless that was there in the original comic or hardcover. Probably was a hardcover, right? 48-page hardcover or something?
Could be. I don't know. I'm not familiar with Blaze.
But anyways, I would say the artwork is definitely in that Dark Horse quality vein. Like, nothing that's that would disappoint you, I don't think. Like, quality through and through. And sort of like almost like painterly or photo-y at times. Okay, when you get to, I think the Frost Giants are, I'm not sure, like, it's like two animal dudes show up, and I'm like, are these supposed to be, like, the Frost Giant guys, or are these Her protectors. I'm not entirely sure. But anyway, she's like looking on at this, at the, all these men battling. And she's like, yeah, I'm into this and everything. And then by the end of the story, she notices that Conan struts onto the scene and is like, I'm Conan. I'm going to kill some people. And she's like, yes, I like this dude. And then when you would think that this would get pretty violent when there's like two forces are on the field battling each other. But there's this like, it's almost all like blocked out with like splotches of blood. So you just sort of see shadows and men and everything. That's the other thing. It's just uncensored. And I'm like, when the time they could have done a lot of stuff, then they didn't. Or it's like shadow. Like if someone's being run over, run through with a sword, it's only in shadow.
Yeah, but it sounds like you prefer that.
I mean, yeah, I don't mind. It's just weird. Because I was definitely, I was like, even if that, like the, some crazy otherworldly visions going on, I'm like, I was totally gonna get it for this story. I'm like, fine. I know it's good. I'm like preparing myself and I'm like, oh, it's just like the Dark Horse stuff. I like had mentally psyched myself out. I'm like, if this is like The Boys or something. And then it's like, it wasn't at all. I don't know. Maybe it'll take a turn.
His books are, I mean, they do have sex and violence, but they're your typical sword and sort like, there's oftentimes the attractive wench at the bar and he ends up bedding her and killing a few bad guys, but it's not like The Boys or anything, I don't think. Like, it's your bog standard pulp magazine sword and sorcery adventure.
But I was just trying to think of something like that I wouldn't want to read about. So I'm like, well, what's my like standard thing that would be like, oh, if a comic turns in a direction, I'm like, if it's this.
Cruel to Cats?
Maybe.
All right, so have you ordered the next issues?
Yes, I have, so I'll be getting the next ones.
Nice. Look at you getting new comics. The whole world, it's like the world never stopped, Kevin.
Well, I like when I can find good and interesting, different stuff.
Well, I'm sure you'll be, maybe you need to organize a comic book festival, Kevin. You can put on a show, the Yellow Knife Comic Arts Festival.
You can have two people in the room at a time.
Well, maybe you'll make it virtual. But that's it. Phil, you got any final things to say? Are you still there, Phil?
Yes.
Buy more comics.
Good. I was just ordering the Ash. Remember that Ash comic?
Yeah.
Is that stealing someone's catchphrase if for 2021 it's like buy more comics? Oh, wait, it is.
Phil is actually buying more comics, so I think that's
fair. Well, it was all indie stuff, too, so it'll be all good stuff for the show.
Kevin, do you have a new catch, or are you going to repurpose your old one?
I don't have a catchphrase. There is no catchphrase for 2021.
Nice. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe, enjoy yourself, be a good person, and, you know, just hang in there. We can do this.
Old things are interesting. There's that big old boot. Now look up. Way up. And we're on our way to the castle. I'll hurry over first and go in the back door so I can let the drawbridge down and open the big front doors for you. Are you ready? Here's my castle. Thank you. we are inside. Here's one little chair for one of you, and a bigger chair for two more to curl up in. For someone who wants to rock, a rocking chair in the middle. There. Now, hook up. Way up. And I'll call Rusty. Rusty?
Hi.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi, Bradley.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Good, good.
Where have you been? What have you seen or thought about?